You are flying high on Locked On Eagles, your source for the best Philadelphia Eagles news and analysis, brought to you by LockedOnEagles.com. I am your host, Michael Kist. You can follow my work at Inside the Pylon, Breaking Football, and Grandstand Sports Network. As always, I am joined by the best co-host in the game, Mr. 7-Year Streak Without a Bad Day. He is Benjamin Solak of Bleeding Green Nation and NDT Scouting. You can follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. Hey, Ben, how you doing, brother?
I don't, like, usually the Monday answer is so easy, but the Eagles didn't play. So, I mean, like, yeah. I told the listeners on the Friday episode, you know, I had a good time, stress-free watching a football, just kind of flipping through the channels. Obviously, the rest of the NFC East went 0-3, so that's always pretty sweet. But, yeah, besides that, not really much to report on. Really, still just riding the Timmy Jernigan high, man. Riding the high of the extension. That's where I am.
Yeah, we love the extension here on Locked On Eagles. And since we had that bye week, we understand that many of you may have taken the week off as well. So real quick, I'm going to recap what we did last week so you can get caught up. So on Monday, we reacted to the Eagles' dominance of the Denver Broncos, which was a fun time. On Tuesday, we took the media to task for their erroneous Wentz takes, or the low-rent media, however you want to see them. On Wednesday, we had Jimmy Kemsky on from PhillyVoice.com, and we talked all things Eagles, including his mastery at MS Paint and the BOFA system. On Thursday, we took a look back at the 1980 Eagles-Cowboys NFC Championship game. That was a fun one. All the bells and whistles you would get from a normal 30-30 or a football life crammed into a easy-to-digest podcast. And on Friday, Benjamin talked with John Oning of FanRag Sports, and they took a look at where the draft classes for both the Eagles and the Cowboys stand now, how they produced, so on and so forth. It was a really good week on Locked On Eagles last week, Ben.
Oh, absolutely. It was a great time. That episode with John was a ton of fun, and it was cool to kind of have the bye week and to explore getting to do some different things. I can't speak enough about the episode Mike did about that championship game, and that was a fantastic, fantastic pod.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I put a lot of work into that freaking thing, and hopefully we're going to have another one done of those for the 44-6 game later on this week for rivalry week. We got to talk about Cowboys, Falcons. Falcons come away with the W 27-7. I think the Falcons had 8 sacks, if I'm not mistaken, because Tyron Smith did not play, and he is week to week with a back injury, and Chaz Green came in and allowed Adrian Claiborne to essentially steal his fruit cup. It was bad, dude. Oh,
set records, man. Adrian Claiborne. You know Adrian Claiborne, that edge rusher that you know really well, that everybody's afraid of, who just set like a record for the Falcons with 6. Oh my goodness. No, it was ugly.
It did not make sense. And the Cowboys abandoned the run early, and things got ugly after the Falcons took the lead at half, which I believe was 10-7, if I'm not mistaken. And from there, it was just bad, man. Dak was running around. From everything that I saw, Dak looked like the weight of the world was on his shoulders. Mm-hmm. And the Cowboys game planned it as such, and it just didn't come to fruition. And you know what? For being in that situation, I'm going to give Dak a pass on this one because I think he's been excellent so far this season. And, you know, he was under fire that entire game. When your blind side isn't protected like that and you're getting sacked 6 times by Adrian Claiborne, there are bigger issues than Zeke being out. Tyron being out was obviously the biggest impact for them. Ben, what did you see from that game?
No, that's exactly correct in the sense that you can't come at Dak for that performance. If you're trying to look at that performance and say Wentz is playing better than Dak, or, you know, even, you know, I saw some I forget who it was, saying like, you know, like, oh, like now Dak is experiencing that which Carson experienced, you know, when Lane went down or without the weapons and everything like that. Well, you know, it's very difficult. I think that's a tough comparison to make, number one. But number two, what's kind of important to notice there is that you can, as a coaching staff and as a quarterback, you can mentally prepare for that a lot more when you know you're coming into the season with it versus when you've had it for the entire time and then all of a sudden you don't, right? Which is the nature of injuries. That's what happens to every team. It's not a Dallas unique thing. What I will say is this: Dak versus Wentz coming up, you know, Sunday night, prime time. That's going to be the narrative. You know, I think Dak is a very good quarterback. I think he plays very well. I think Carson is a dang good quarterback. I think he plays very well. At this point right now, if I, you know, over the beginnings of their career, who's played the better game overall? For me, it's Dak Prescott. Now, if you're asking me to take a quarterback on which to build my franchise, it has always been Carson Wentz, and it will remain Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz's ceiling is just, in my opinion, plainly higher than Dak's, and as what we've seen, clearly he's growing, right? And so there's reason to believe that he'll continue. That being said, you know, that'll be the narrative coming in. What matters to me, and you touched on this when you said that they came in with the entire game plan on Dak's shoulders. Doug Peterson's going to mop the floor with Jason Garrett, right? I mean, if Dak and Wentz is a quarterback battle, they're both talented, you can pick your poison or whatever, you know, make cases for either one. I simply do not see it being a debate, you know, even in Peterson's young career. I mean, Jason Garrett, I do not think yet has a playoff victory as a head coach. He had that string of 8-8 years that just were inexcusable, right, where he couldn't pull his team out of mediocre. And then coming into this game against the Falcons, a very beatable team. How inexplicable inability to prepare for a lack of Tyron Smith and Ezekiel Elliott.
Yeah.
What are you doing? You know, like this. If you have injured players, those are where coaches rise up. Hashtag Falcons. Hashtag rise up. And nothing, right? Like when we had Big V in there at left tackle up against Denver Broncos and the fantastic pass rushers they had, they did a fantastic job schematically defending Big V. They did nothing for this Chaz Green fellow, whatever his name is.
Right, and they had 15 runs by non-quarterbacks, by all running backs. Alfred Morris had 11 for 53. Rod Smith 3 for 14. Darren McFadden 1 for -2. I don't understand that. Because they got away from the run. They must have had less than 10 runs in the first half, and it was a close game. The Cowboys had the lead for a good portion of that first half. I don't understand the game plan of putting it all on Dak and making him throw, you know, 30 plus or scramble and all that stuff 30 plus times a game. And it showed, and he got sacked 8 times for 50 yards. It was by far, statistically, it's easy to look at this game and put it on Dak, and I'm not going to do that. And we've already discussed that, so we'll kind of move on from that. If the game plan is for Jason Garrett to come and play Philadelphia with the idea that you're going to pass on this team and not run the ball whatsoever, which I don't think they're going to be able to run the ball on us. I don't see a path for victory for the Cowboys against us if they have this same game plan. The run game's not going to work, and we are just going to tee off on that offensive line. So we're going to get into it a lot more this week with different previews. We're going to have Marcus Mosier from Locked On Cowboys here on the show on Wednesday and whatnot. We'll kind of take a look around the league right now as far as what else, the challenges that the Eagles may face in the playoffs, since, I mean, this team is playoff bound. We don't need to dance around it or anything like that. The Saints trounce the Bills 47-10. And I kind of saw this letdown coming from the Bills, but at the same time, summarily just beat down. And this and not in the normal way from the Saints that from what you would expect. Because the Saints, from as a rushing team, 298 yards on the ground for the Saints. That's absurd when you think of what your normal perception of this team is as a passing team with Drew Brees and whatnot. But Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram have been fantastic, and they had big holes to run through. I saw on the first drive, the Saints were running duo, and there was nothing that the Bills could do about it.
Yeah,
and just dominated on the front lines from start to finish. It was a very, very impressive performance. That defense is coming along, especially on the perimeter. I thought it might be a good game for the Bills to get right on offense as far as working the middle of the field and whatnot, but the Saints just shut it down, man. It was really impressive. What did you think, Ben?
Absolutely. For me right now, the moral of the story is, and you know, going back to coaching again, Sean Payton has really kind of changed the way he approaches the game. Because, yeah, the Saints that you know are 500 yards through the air on the arm of Drew Brees, and they give up 40 points, and it's a race. It's whoever gets the ball last. But this is a team that's playing excellent defensive football. And then, yeah, the running game, I think, is the biggest story there. The past, seven games for the Saints, they've rushed for over 100 yards in 6 of them. And the only one in which they didn't was 20-0 against Miami, where they just walked ahead and then put them away. You know, now I've heard tell that, you know, some folks are saying, you know what, the Saints look like the best team in the NFL, which is a lot of a hogwash, because but that's what I tweeted it out right after I saw it. That's what I call bye week memory. The second a good team goes on bye week, the other teams that are playing are better than
yeah.
them. Which,
yeah.
Which the Saints haven't done much in the way of beating difficult opponents, and neither has Philadelphia. But you can't look at the 7-2 team and look at the 8-1 team, and they're both on 7-game win streaks, and they're both facing, you know, by like Football Outsiders DVOA, the average, you know, the average team the Eagles face is 22nd overall in the league. The average team that the New Orleans Saints face is 21st overall, right? Mm. So we're splitting hairs here.
Yeah.
Okay, if these, you know, so you can say these teams have you know, faced equally poor schedules and they're both, you know, dominating poor competition. The fact of the matter is one team has a better record than the other. And that's where I am as far as who the best team in the NFL is. It's, you know, like that's, you know, to me, it's a little codswallop because this is simply because the Eagles are on the bye. You know, it's recency bias instead of its finest.
And I agree with that. I mean, the Saints had a very impressive performance. Am I, you know, concerned about them? Yeah, sure. Okay. I'm not as concerned as traveling to, say, go play the Saints as I am the Seahawks on the road in the playoffs, which probably isn't going to happen. And then there's also the possibility of traveling to the West Coast to face the Los Angeles Rams, who had another dominating performance today. And they just trounced the Houston Texans, and the defense was showing out. Gurley was showing out. Robert Woods probably had a career day. I haven't even looked at the stats, but I mean, are you concerned about the Rams as far as, I mean, they're taking that division, right?
Yeah, they're going to take that division, I believe. You know, if they let Seattle hang around for a while, and I believe Seattle already has a win over them this year. I'm pretty sure Seattle won that game. If you let Seattle hang around, you know, around week 13, week 14, Seattle can make a push and potentially get that division. Seattle will make that push. That's the sort of team that Seattle is. But I think they can put it away, especially the way they've been playing. And I'll say plainly, I think the Rams worry me the most as far as, you know, I'm worried about the Saints. But as far as teams that are on the Eagles schedule remaining, I think the Rams are the ones that worry me the most. And here's the reason why. You know, we like to talk about this streak that the Eagles are on with their offense scoring more than 20 points, leading the league. I believe it's 13 games now. I'm not certain. I'll throw another one at you. Over the past 11 games, the Eagles are 10-1. They allowed, in those 10 wins, 24 points or less. The only game in which they didn't was 27 points to the Chiefs, which we lost. All right, so this Eagle defense over 10 of the past 11 games has kept the opposing team to 24 points or less. When that happens, the Eagles win, right? So the Eagles are scoring above 20 and keeping you above 20 and keeping you below 24. So unless you're winning 23-21, you're not beating this team. The reason the Rams concern me is because when I look at the offenses remaining on this schedule, when you got the Cowboys with no Elliott, potentially no Teron Smith, and you've got the Bears and the rookie Mitchell Trubisky, you've got the Seahawks with that awful offensive line, you have the Giants, you have the Raiders in Philly, which, like, you know, sometimes the Raiders are hot, but they're very cold, and then the Cowboys again. The only team I foresee breaking 20 points, or excuse me, breaking 24, is the Rams.
Yeah.
Because, and the reason being there, it's not necessarily that, you know, I think they can move the ball consistently. You know, I think that the Eagles will be able to batter Goff around. I think the Eagles will be able to keep Gurley contained. You know, there'll be some difficulty there, but that Rams game will be the second of the West Coast trips, right? It'll be on a slightly short week. The Eagles play on Sunday night, so they'll have, like, you know, a half a day less recovery. But that Rams team, and we saw it, 94-yard touchdown to Robert Woods, what they can do is just blow up on you, right? Like, it was 9-7. Texans were winning. And then the third quarter finished, and it was 30-9, right? Just explosiveness, right out of the gate. So that's what worries me about that Rams team.
And we're going to find out a lot more about this Rams team before we get to them, because the Rams have next the Vikings on the road, which that defense can be a buzzsaw when they're playing their best football. And then they have the Saints, which we just talked about. They have them at home, which will be interesting to see the Saints outdoors against the Rams in what possibly could be a big time shootout. And then they travel to play the Arizona Cardinals, and then it's their home against us. And then after that, I mean, they're on the road against the Seahawks, and they're on the road against the Titans. That's a tough back half of a schedule to deal with for the Rams. So as far as putting the schedules side by side and seeing the Eagles next to the Rams, you know, the Eagles could drop one to the Rams and win the majority of the other games. And I think that they come out on top as far as, you know, the one seed goes. This Eagles team is in prime position to get home field advantage throughout the playoffs. And I think people talking about other teams being the best teams in the NFC and not really putting the Eagles at the front of that are sorely mistaken, because that defense is coming along. We're getting pieces back. Mm-hmm. We're getting some of the best quarterback play in the NFL. And only that, we're getting some of the best coaching in the NFL. And yes, while the Rams may be very well coached up, and the same thing can be said for the Saints, the Eagles have slipped up less. And we've been more consistent. And when it comes to becoming a viable playoff team, consistency and things of that nature matter. And you look at the Steelers. The Steelers played the Colts today on the road and looked like dog crap. Mm-hmm. They looked awful. They have all the talent in the world. They have a team. When you look at that roster, that team could definitely win a Super Bowl. If they go out on the road in the playoffs, I don't know. Can they beat the Colts on the road in the playoffs? It's ugly. The Eagles have been the most consistent team in the NFL, and that's what matters most at the end of the day. And for the Eagles, really, right now, for me, okay, maybe you drop two games in the second half of this season. That's fine. If you're healthy, mm-hmm. and you're somewhat hot coming into the playoffs, you have a chance to beat anybody. And as far as the consistency, I think we have it. I think we're going to continue to have it. The thing that we don't know, the known unknown, is the injuries that occur throughout the season, because they've happened to every team. And the Eagles have been victim to it as well. If you were to look at a starting lineup for injured players, right? You make a Pro Bowl team out of injured players from this year. Mm-hmm. Jordan Hicks would be on it. Jason Peters would be on it. And you could argue that Darren Sproles as a third down back returner specialist would be on it as well. Yeah, exactly. So the Eagles are not just because, oh, it's a weak year because Aaron Rodgers, that's only one quarterback that's down. And the AFC have Deshaun Watson. He's a rookie and whatever. Every team has dealt with it. The Eagles have dealt with it too. If we can kind of stave off those big time losses, then I think we are in very good position heading into the playoffs.
100%. And you know, on tomorrow's pod, on Tuesday's pod, we're doing the whole rest of the season breakdown and all those predictions. And so we're going to get into those games we think we'll win and lose and take the playoffs. I think the one like additional point as far as like why I'm really confident about the Eagles moving forward is, you know, this Saints rushing attack is doing very well. Absolutely. And that Minnesota front seven is absolutely deadly. And so you can make cases for, I think, certain sides of the ball, the offense and the defense. But when it comes to the cumulative trench play for both offensive and defensive line, Eagles have the best combination in the league. That's not a conversation, right? Like Jacksonville defensive line might be the best, but they don't hold a candle to the Eagles offensive line. And they've got some good pieces, right? That Saints offensive line is causing tons of problems, but they don't have the front four the Eagles do. Just combined, when you look at it, the Eagles have the best trench play in the NFL, and we know how valuable that is come playoff time and come January. So, Mike, let me ask you this, because I feel like we didn't pick on the Cowboys enough.
You're right. We never do.
Yeah, that's true. I'm going to, you know, 1 to 10, 1 being least worried, 10 being most worried. How concerned are you about this game? You know, just gut reaction Sunday night. Because I'll tell you right now, I was very surprised to see the line for the Philadelphia game. They were a 3.5-point favorite against the Cowboys in Dallas. That's how they opened. So, like, where are you feeling as far as, like, 1 to 10, your confidence?
Yeah, and home field advantage usually gives you about 2 to 3 points. That means that the Eagles are pretty much a heavy favorite coming into this one for NFL standards. I am not concerned about this Cowboys team whatsoever at this point. It's not just the effort, it's just the game planning that they showed in that Falcons game where they got away from the run so early. The way that the Cowboys master defense is by controlling the clock and having these long drives. And the Cowboys had a long drive to start the game out, but after that, they got completely away from it. They weren't able to block up. They weren't able to scheme up. I feel like if you put them in a room and you gave them similar pieces, that Doug Peterson right now would be coaching Garrett out the door, because that's what we've done so far. We lost Peters, right? Mm-hmm. And we face Von Miller, and Von Miller doesn't have a single sack. The Cowboys lose Tyron Smith, and they face Adrian Claiborne, and they give up 6 sacks to Adrian Claiborne and 7 on the left side, mm-hmm. and 8 total. As far as that goes, man, I'm not concerned about the Cowboys right now. And maybe they have like that moment that this was their coming to Jesus moment where it's like, okay, this is not working, we need to change things up. But right now, I'm not worried about the Cowboys at all.
Yeah, I mean, I you know, Eagles win this puppy on Sunday night. They're at 9-1. The best potential record then left in the division will be 5-5. So that's a 4-game lead. You know, at that point, if Philadelphia can beat the Bears and the Giants,
can we talk? Can we talk?
Oh
about
yeah,
the Giants?
We probably should. So San Francisco, Michael. San Francisco, I forget it because I bet on this Giants San Francisco game and I actually lost money because I took the under. Because San Francisco, like, you know, over the past however so many games or whatever, had only scored like 17 points per game or something. Like, they had like no offense, right? They also came in with like one of the most injury depleted defenses we've seen in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And what? The Giants scored like, what, like 13, I think it was? Yeah. Just something like disgusting. Just so. And oh, it's so painful. The Giants have given up a touchdown to a tight end in every single game this year. And here's the reason. Okay, the reason why that's funny is because every year they give up an inordinate number of touchdowns to tight ends. And every year, do they draft a linebacker? Do they invest anything in a linebacker? Do they do anything for a coverage safety? No!
Nope.
They don't. It's amazing how firmly they continue to beat their head against the same wall and wonder why they haven't gotten anywhere.
The Giants losing to the 49ers was amazing. I was sitting at the bar watching it, and there was a bunch of Giants fans in the background, and a buddy of mine is a Cowboys fan, and the Cowboys were starting to, things were starting to slip away, and all the Giants fans were talking crap about the Cowboys, like, oh, you're down 3 points to the Falcons, and I'm like, we're both like, dude, y'all are losing to possibly the worst team in football in the last 5 years, if you discount the Browns.
Right, now, we should talk about that for a second. My heart goes out to Cleveland, all right? Because DeShone Kizer is my quarterback, too. I firmly believe that with the correct touch and development, DeShone Kizer can develop into quite the good NFL quarterback. I believed preseason that that could be Hugh. My confidence is steeply waning in that regard. Kizer played a great game. He really did. He made some rookie mistakes, but he played a great game. Like, you know, by his standards, especially because he's been struggling, and then by any rookie standards, he did a fantastic job. And that I just shafted him. I mean, the Browns coaching staff and his supporting cast just straight gave him the shaft, Mike. You had a third down and 11 when they were down by 7 with 5 minutes left. And Myles Garrett jumps offside, makes it 3rd and 6. And then Greg Roman sends 7. Or not Greg Roman, Greg Williams. Greg Williams sends 7 on 3rd and 6, down by 7.
Yeah.
Just protect the sticks. They ran a tunnel screen that went for 40 yards. Goldtate scores a touchdown. Now it's a 2-possession game. Kizer gets it back, walks them all the way down the field with 3 drops. There were 3 drops. He had 3 fourth down conversions on the drive. 3 drops. Gets them all the way down the field. And then Hugh dials up a wide receiver fade in the red zone with Ricardo Lewis. And this is the part where you ask, Mike, who's Ricardo Lewis? Because nobody knows. And with Ricardo Lewis against Darius Slay, who's one of the better corners in the NFL. Slay reads it perfectly. Kizer throws like a bad ball. Like, it wasn't great. Ricardo Lewis gives up on the route. Right? Because he doesn't, like, because he got trounced by Slay at the line. Slay picks it off in the end zone. Kizer's life sucks so much, and it hurts my feelings.
Not only having to deal with Brian Kelly, but then you come into the NFL and you think things are going to get better, and then you have an NFL coach, and then you have an NFL coach call quarterback sneak.
Allegedly, he audibled to it, which honestly, like,
stop it.
But given the front that he had, if he audibled to it, I'm fine with that.
I didn't hear an audible. And they were lined up in a formation that a quarterback sneak would happen. Otherwise, he's just handing off or he's running play action to the right. I don't see that happening, and I don't see him having the control over that offense to be able to do that. So that's very interesting to me as far as Kizer audible to a QB sneak. Look, there's been tons of different stories around the Browns as far as, did they fax in the AJ McCarron trade? And where does the blame lie? Well, it lies everywhere in that organization, and it doesn't belong with DeShone Kizer whatsoever. And I'm with you. DeShone Kizer can be a very good quarterback, but it's very frustrating to see him in that position. Weird rant that we got onto here about the Cleveland Browns on Locked On Eagles.
Right, because as you know, I'm slightly attached to the Browns. Number one, because, and this is my big thing, Eagle fans who make fun of the Browns, I don't get it. Like, we get into like debates with Browns people on Twitter, they traded us the pick that got us Carson Wentz. We should be so nice to these people, number one, right? Like, we're lording this over them. That's awful. I also love Sashi Brown, who's their tech, like, GM, executive guy, whatever. I just think he's awesome. Like, he's just generally like a cool dude. But I do very much believe in the way that the front office approach things. I, you know, they did the thing closest to tanking the NFL has ever seen, right? And I think that that's a very good, valuable approach. Now we know that, like, some weird nonsense is happening. Like, apparently they tried to trade for Terrell Pryor at the deadline. By the way, they lost Terrell Pryor in free agency. And they, here's the thing, Mike. They offered him a 4-year deal in free agency. And Pryor was told by his agent not to take it. He was like, go to Washington, you'll produce more, and then you'll get better in the, you know, 1-year deal, whatever. Yeah. And then he's garbage in Washington.
And they were like, we want to give up assets.
Right. And the Browns try to get him back, right? Which makes sense. And Washington didn't trade him, which doesn't make sense. Right. Right? And then there's the McCarron thing. So, like, that you know, and apparently, like, you know, Hugh causes problems in that front office as well, which the thing about a front office like that is you can't have people touch it, right? You have to trust the process, right? Hashtag TGP. You have to let it operate, which is very difficult to do. I understand that. So I would encourage Eagle fans, be nice to Browns fans. They've struggled for a long time. I'm sure that every Browns fan has just, like, inner kernels of self-loathing because they left Allen Carson Wentz. Stop reminding them about it. That's not nice. End rant.
Yeah. Root for the Browns, but also hope that they get the first overall pick because they... Jeez, man. I don't want to see the Giants get, like, the best overall player in this draft if they did actually draft right, you know. It's so weird. It's so weird seeing the Giants like this. It's a mess. It's an absolute mess, and I freaking love it. So, Ben, what do we have for the gentle listeners for the rest of the week?
What's up, gentle listeners? Let me drop the diggity for you. Tuesday, we're talking the rest of the season. That's kind of playoff predictions, where we think the Eagles will go. We'll check back in on some of our preseason predictions. We'll make fun of each other. It'll be a good time. Wednesday is the crossover pod with Locked On Cowboys. That's going to be a fun one. Obviously, tons to talk about. So many storylines coming into this game. That's one you don't want to miss. Listen, it's rivalry week, all right? Cowboy fans have been talking smack for 10 weeks of the football season and every week preseason before it. I am ready for this football game. Thursday is the breakdown of another Cowboys and Eagles classic. That's the 44-6 game, one of my favorite games of all time. So make sure you're listening for that one as well. Friday, we're previewing, and then we're in, baby. Backstretch of the season. It's going to be exciting.
You got to keep it locked on here on Locked On Eagles. Fly, Eagles, fly.
Caw-caw.